Welcome to the Elks Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara, and we are diving into 16 questions from the NFC. So did the AFC yesterday, revisiting all the NFC questions today. We'll just start from the jump here with the New York Giants. Is Daniel Jones the answer quarterback? I wrote, this seems unlikely. The team declined this fifth-year option, and he has shown no growth during his career, with the first 3 years averaging 6.6, 6.6, and then 6.7 yards per attempt as a passer. That front office was new and a new head coach, and you know maybe that they would be thinking about drafting a new quarterback. Well, what was the result? Well, it's more likely now that he's the answer for the future. However, I don't think it's a sure thing. Daniel Jones finished quarterback 9 in season long. It averaged 18.2 points per game, which is actually good for QB8 in points per game among quarterbacks that played multiple games. There was a couple of guys that were like one-off starters that had higher. I think Sam Howell and maybe one other one, maybe like Davis Webb or somebody, actually had higher numbers. So that's kind of where we're at with him. Still, again, below 6.0, below the 7 yards per attempt threshold at 6.8. So we'll see, where he's at. I think there's success, but this looks a lot like a one-hit wonder, right? Back half quarterback, one finish, after year three, 25 or older, right? Those are, like, when you look at, when you... It's like the sign of the person standing, as I went and got a coffee the other day, and there was someone standing out on the side of the road with like the you'll be damned, you know, sinners are damned to eternal damnation sign. You know, one of those people that, prophesize or whatever on the side of the road. If I were to do that with quarterback profiles, I would stand there and be like, don't draft rookies in the top 10 of your startup draft, and don't draft back half quarterbacks who finish with their first hit after year three and are 25 years or older, right? Like, that would be, you'll be struck to eternal damnation. That would be the sign. So I would just be cautious with that. Again, he's like a top 15 guy. Give me a little bit of pause. I found this interesting from Brad Spielberger. QBA was 76.4 PFF grade, 14 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, 16 big time throws, 8 turnover worthy plays, 6.7 yards per attempt, and a good runner. Quarterback B, 76 PFF grade. That's basically the same. 15 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. Again, basically the same. 7 big time throws, 19 turnover worthy plays. That's flip flop, right? It was 2-1 on the other side. This is almost 1-3 on the bad side. 6.8 yards per attempt, good runner. Who are they? Well, the first one's Tyrod Taylor in the season where the Bills went to a surprise playoff appearance. The second one's Daniel Jones. What do they have in common? Joe Shane was in the front office for both of them. Color me skeptical that they're committed to him, because what was the Bills' reaction to that? They drafted a quarterback by the name of Josh Allen. So I would be pretty skeptical of that at this point, that he is the that they're going to be this long-term commitment here to Daniel Jones. All right, next up here, we've got the Philadelphia Eagles. Is Jalen Hurts a franchise quarterback? Yes. Next topic. quarterback 1 in points per game, ranked 5th in EPA per play among quarterbacks en route to a Super Bowl appearance. Again, I'm recording this week before the Super Bowl, so we don't know the ultimate conclusion of that, but yes, I believe that he is a franchise quarterback, and he will be engaged in high-level extension discussions this offseason. Top 5 dynasty quarterback, I'm fine with that. Particularly once he signs the extension, I just want to sort of, I'd love to see it first, but I think it's going to happen, and pretty confident in that. Is CeeDee Lamb a wide receiver 1? Maybe my most, I don't know if it's controversial take. I don't know if you want to sort of say that. One of the things I was most skeptical about was anointing CeeDee Lamb this offseason. He ran 72 and 76% of routes on Dallas's dropbacks in his first 2 years while playing the majority of those snaps in the slot. The slot work actually continued this year. He actually played 62.5% of his snaps in the slot, but he took a major jump in route participation from the 70s up to 95% and jumped in yards per route run from 2.38 up to 2.38 from 2.06 last year. He finished his quarterback as wide receiver 6 in total points scored, wide receiver 8 in points per game. He's very good. Right, I think it's interesting. Like, it's not typical that you see an elite wide receiver be a slot wide receiver. So that was something that I was cautious about. Again, I could have to go back and look at some of the tweets and stuff and pull up some of the values. Like, I still think, like, if you'd taken a first plus, I think there was some discussion. There was a specific trade that I looked at. I think it was like 2 firsts and a receiver for him, and I was like, you have to do that. Like, you know, that's more the concern, right? The replaceability factor of him, yeah, in that tier, you had to take him at 3 or 4. You could take someone a lot later, and it would replicate it. It was more of the theory than anything, and especially if he doesn't become Jefferson and Chase. You know, what has it paid you off? Like, he's good. He's very good. He's turned into a good player. And again, and it's an interesting profile, right? You're going to play 95% of snaps with, you know, 2/3 of those being in the slot. Like, that's not a typical wide receiver one. So good job for him there. And we'll see sort of going forward. Again, I wouldn't take him at wide receiver 3 because I think there's a big tier there. Okay, how is the quarterback situation solved in Washington? The answer was not Carson Wentz, and it's probably not Taylor Heineke. The team turned to Sam Howell in week 18. They should have probably done that in week 8 or week 1, one of the two. He had 11 completions, 19 attempts, 169 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 interception, while adding a rushing touchdown in his only game action of his career. Listen, play quarterbacks on rookie deals because they can really outkick their contract, right? Like, they can really beat their contract. You'd rather play a bad quarterback on a rookie deal than a average quarterback on a veteran deal, right? It's just a huge edge. So do that. I don't know why they didn't. Teams don't lean into that. They should. You know, even like, I don't think Jalen Hurts was that good at points in the past couple of years. He was fine. Like, he is fine. But the problem, the benefit is you can play him as being fine while making nothing and putting a lot of stuff around him. And he goes from fine to being like, that team's really good with him as a part of it. You can win with him, and maybe not necessarily because of him, but you can win with him. Again, now he takes a big step and you're winning because of him. But that situation, you can win with a quarterback on a rookie deal because you can do so much around him. They should have leaned into that with Sam Howell. You know, the lesson should, at least so they would have known for this year, right? Am I on a Jalen Hurts track where I can sort of win with him and we'll see how it turns out long term? We don't know. So we'll watch what they do. There's been some commitment. I think it was overstated that they said he was their quarterback of 2023. I didn't actually see that. What I saw was that he's in their plans of being a top 2 guy for 2023. So yeah, they could be in the business. But again, this team's picking 16th, which speaks to why you should draft a quarterback and play him, Sam Howell, right? You stop being in the middle, right? Pick a lane. Either we want to be a contender or we want to pick early. Right, but don't keep just regurgitating veteran quarterbacks. This is the team. This is the stuff that teams do. They're constantly in the middle. The team's good enough to win if they could land a guy in a rookie quarterback. Draft one and play him, right? Because even if he's not good, it's better than your alternative of keep just churning through mediocre quarterbacks on overpaid deals. All right, fine. There, I'm done. all right, Chicago. You know, what's really the plan at quarterback, right? They traded up for Justin Fields, fired the front office, fired their coach. Now they have Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus. And, you know, where are they, right? What's kind of the plan there? Well, the plan included Justin Fields running without a lot of support in the passing game. Darnell Mooney got hurt. They traded for Chase Claypool, which is a complete and abject failure. Fields' passing numbers actually took a step back. Right, I think you can look at it and be like, now, in fairness, right, it's tough to grade him because everyone's bad around him. I understand that. At the same time, the same conversation we just had about Sam Howell, you have to ask yourself, is it warrant, you know, resetting the clock? And even if the quarterback is Fields or worse, are we in a more advantageous situation for the next 5 years, right? Is Fields on a rookie deal going to be on a contending team? And I think the answer to that is probably not. And if the answer to that's probably not, I think you probably should reset the clock. That's sort of my take. He went from 6.9 yards per attempt to 7.1. Big time throws last year, 6.1%. This year, 3.8%. Turnover worthy plays last year, 3.7%. So you're like, okay, that's a good positive split. This year, 4.4%. So we went from basically a 6-4 big time throw to turnover worthy play percentage to it being, you know, more turnover worthy plays than big time throws. So not great. Sack numbers were worse, especially in terms of total sacks, but pressure to sack rate, which I think is like your processing stat, that was worse. Time to throw was almost a half second later. You know, this is and you juxtapose that. One of the big defenses I saw of him was CJ was the offense was really catered to sort of these long option routes at Ohio State. So he would hold on to the ball. Like, CJ Stroud is not at all look like what Justin Fields looks like. So in that same offense at Ohio State. So I think it's very, I think you have to have real questions and concerns about him as a passer at this point. So we'll see what decision that they make, but they have to sort of figure this out. But my concern is that they're going to figure it out in a very Daniel Jones like way. Figure it out in year four, we got to pay him, and we've done really nothing to capitalize on it. Is Jared Goff a long-term solution at quarterback in Detroit? So two-parter there, really. I didn't realize how much of a two-parter this question was because I didn't expect that they would get basically a potential yes and a potential no from that sentence. So he had an affordable contract next 2 years, but no guaranteed money after this year. Good weapons, good offensive line. You know, a team that could overperform. They did overperform. Jared Goff played some of the best football of his career. From week 10 on, he led the league in EPA per play en route to and he was actually not intercepted en route to a after week 10 and en route to a winning season and nearly made the playoffs. Should have made the playoffs probably. The team had the good fortune of selecting sixth because of the Stafford-Goff deal. So that Stafford-Goff deal, there might have been a later pick in there as well, but it ends up being Goff and 32 from last year and 6 from this year for Stafford. I didn't expect that this would be the case. I didn't expect that the Detroit Lions pick would be 12 picks later than the Rams pick. When I wrote this question, that wasn't in my range of outcomes. So I think when you look at this, especially if that Rams pick was going to be, right, especially if the Detroit pick was going to be at 18, I definitely didn't think it was a top 10 pick for the Rams, right? You know, maybe the Detroit Lions made a deep run into the playoffs and there's something like that, some crazy thing happened, but I didn't expect it to be, you know, Detroit would be picking 12 spots later and the Rams would pick at 6, right? Like, that wasn't what was in my equation. I would have only thought that was possible if Detroit had made the playoffs. So they got 6 and 18. It's a good combination of young talent. They have to consider a quarterback upgrade. Right? This is a championship window for them, probably with a rookie quarterback. You know, with a down NFC, we can talk about the whole landscape of the NFC. Certainly with a down NFC, I think that's true. You know, this is a big time for them to sort of make that decision. I think they have to lean into it, right? 6 and 18 plus some other stuff probably gets you Lamar Jackson if you're sort of in that business. It probably gets you a rookie quarterback if you're in that business as well. So I think that they have to be in that. But the flip side of that is I also think that Jared Goff's a long-term starter. So whether it's in Detroit or someplace else, he's fine in the quarterback two range. And I think that that is an encouraging sign there for the future. He fleshes out that what's becoming a little bit of a weak quarterback two range in super flex drafts. Again, he's also a lesson of bet on depressed pedigree that's done it. Bet on depressed pedigree that has done it. Jared Goff's a good example of that. All right, who's the wide receiver one in Green Bay? Turns out it's Christian Watson. Took off in the final 8 games of the season, averaged 6.5 targets, 3.9 receptions, 65.4 receiving yards, and 9 touchdowns per game. He averaged, he finished as wide receiver 10 during that stretch, and he actually put a claim on the wide receiver 1 in the offense. He was all top 10 as well in yards per route run during that stretch. So it's not fluky touchdown-based stuff. It's actually good performance. We'll see here with the Rodgers stuff what happens. We'll see with Jordan Love and all that, how that all transitions. But I'm this is an interesting spot to watch. Again, I think he's probably going to be low in valuation here. Relative to the other first rounders, that is probably a reason for there's probably a reason for that in the the pedigree is different, right? The quarterback's different, but on fantasy calc, for example, he's behind George Pickens. That is stupidity. So still dirt cheap. Relative to the idea that George Pickens is ahead of Christian Watson. George Pickens had fantasy calc as wide receiver 21, and Christian Watson's 26. That is such horrible process that I can't even quite get over it. So, Christian Watson's certainly undervalued. Certainly undervalued, by the way. And this is the first time I've actually looked at fantasy calc in a while. Treylon Burks is also undervalued, right? The idea that either of those two gentlemen are going behind George Pickens is insane. That's insane. So there we go. So that's the take. All right, Minnesota. Minnesota has a fascinating offense. Minnesota is fascinating. Like the last 3 years, it's been really interesting. Team significantly underperformed expectation, ranking as the first team ever to overperform their Pythagorean record by more than 4 games. Again, it's more possible with 17 games than 16 games, but still. The team finished 13-4 despite a negative 3-point scoring differential. They were outscored by 3 points by their opponents, yet finished 13-4. It's a nearly impossible mathematical feat. They face a crossroads. Kirk Cousins is due $30 million. He's due a big cap. He's due a big roster bonus as well of $20 million. He has a cap hit of $36.25 million this year. The team would take $48.75 million in... a cap hit if they cut him, right? So it doesn't even save them money to cut him. They could trade him away and save $17.5 million in the cap. He's got no trade clause, so he really controls his own destiny. I actually thought, as I was looking at this, I was like, do you just play it out? Right? I kind of thought like the answer was you extend him or you trade him. I wonder, as I was sort of looking at it more and more and thinking about it, I actually slept on it. I was like, do you just pay him and just say, screw it, we're going to pay him. We're just going to play it out and we'll figure it out. Right, we'll save around it. We'll cut Dalvin Cook. We'll do that sort of stuff and just play this out. I think they're in a really interesting spot about what they do quarterback-wise. I don't think they have a great answer. And what I worry about them is overperform year one, underperform year two, enter a rebuild in year three, fired in the third offseason. Like, that's my concern for this coaching staff, this front office. They could be the albatross around their neck, right? Going back, Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner, right? That albatross around the neck of, you actually overperformed in year one, got super lucky. Whereas if you had gone, 7-10, but won the last 3 games, everyone's like, we're headed in the right direction, right? As opposed to 13-4, where you're like, all right, well, we were actually a 9-8 team or an 8-9 team, right? Like, not great. So, yeah, we'll watch this here and see sort of where they go. But I think it's a fascinating decision. Again, don't get stuck into, sort of buying high on your team. You got to be careful on doing that. That's what they're going to face. Who's a starting quarterback for the future in Atlanta? It's certainly not Marcus Mariota. They employ one of the most run-centric offenses before turning the job over to Desmond Ritter. Mariota elected to have surgery and basically divorced the team, which was an interesting watch. I don't know what he was expecting, honestly. Like, his prior coach had benched him. I don't understand, if it was like, hey, who do you want to go play for? Like, let's go play for the guy that benched me before. Like, he's going to totally take care of me. That's going to be it. like, I don't know. Like, that didn't seem the most, like, forward thought decision. So, week 15 on Ritter, 60.1 PFF grade. He had more big time throws and turnover plays, 3-2, 6.2 yards per attempt. Some of the pressure rate stuff, like sort of in the middle of the position, held on the ball a little bit too long. But yeah, I mean, we'll see what they do. I mean, again, I would rather pay Desmond Ritter than trade for Derek Carr. A billion times over. Rather play Desmond Ritter than pay for Derek Carr, because you can afford a lot more with Desmond Ritter, and Carr doesn't elevate your lack of being able to afford that. All right. But they should be in the quarterback business and the draft too, certainly. Is Baker Mayfield the quarterback of the future in Carolina? No. They caught him. Moving on. The Saints, how do they look after Sean Payton? Honestly, you can actually look at some of the Saints stats and actually say, like, hey, they're really like a top six team. There's some metrics there that, you know, after like the top three or four teams, there's a huge drop off. There's some metrics there that would actually suggest that that the Saints were way underperformers probably. You know, Andy Dalton was actually very good this year, surprisingly good. Like top, I think he was top for a while. He was top five PFF grade. I think he finished out right around there, 6-7, something like that. So yeah, again, Alvin Kamara eroded a bit. Olave, huge breakout. Michael Thomas, injured. And honestly, Dalton, super beneficiary of like, I think some pretty good, like, performance on Chris Olave's part. But honestly, like, wasn't dealt a great hand, right? Michael Thomas is hurt. Jarvis Landry in the lineup. Juwan Johnson's fine at tight end or whatever. Like, I don't think Alvin Kamara had an elite year, but, like, Dalton actually overplayed any sort of expectations when he took the job away from Jameis Winston. Well, it pipped a bit. I don't know. It's tough to ever say with Jameis. But, yeah. I mean, I wonder if they kind of run it back with Andy Dalton. We'll see. I think it's a really interesting situation about how they address the quarterback position, especially now that they just drafted or traded Sean Payton. Now they have that first-round pick from Miami. So we'll see how that all folds out. What is the plan? By the way, it's Miami through... it's the Miami pick from the trade with San Francisco through Denver, right? So it was San Francisco's pick in the Trey Lance deal that went to Miami, right? In the Trey Lance deal, that pick then went from Miami to Denver in the Bradley Chubb deal, and now that pick has reverted back down to New Orleans. So that's the trajectory of that pick. So I did want to flesh that out a little bit. What's the plan after Tom Brady? We're going to find out. Mike Evans, I'm sure, in the final year of his contract, is going to want either an extension or to be compensated or to be traded, would sort of be my assumption. I'm sure he will be the subject of offseason trade rumors. Chris Godwin, I'm sure, will be some subject of some offseason trade rumors, but I think it's probably less likely that he's traded. We'll see what they do at quarterback. I mean, Kyle Trask is the only quarterback and, you know, in-house. Again, is it better to pay Kyle Trask or pay an intermediate quarterback, you know, middle of the tier, middle of the position money? Better to play Kyle Trask. So we'll see. We'll see what happens, assuming that he isn't, you know, awful. I'm sure they have a good understanding of where he's at. So we'll see what happens with them. But certainly setting into a rebuild type situation. What does the Arizona offense look like in a few years? Probably going to be very different. DeAndre Hopkins, 30 years old, and is going to be 31, and is likely to be traded, it looks like. Zach Ertz ripped up his knee. AJ Green, totally sort of off the radar. You know, with Arizona skill players aging, right? Trey McBride was a very bad tight end, rookie tight end. They traded for Marquise Brown, who was fine in that lineup, banged up. And now Kyler Murray has an ACL. So lots of fun stuff there to try and sort through with this team here over this offseason. I'll be interested to watch how it unfolds. New coaching staff as well after they fired Cliff Kingsbury. So really is going to be an interesting sort of situation to watch and try and figure out. As of this recording, they do not have a head coach. So we will be watching and trying to figure all that out. I'm sure they're going to have to bring in a bridge player to help out transition from the start of the season to when Kyler Murray gets back. Is Matthew Stafford's elbow a long-term concern? Turns out it should have been his concussions that were more the long-term concern. They struggled this year kind of under the weight of all of the stuff that had happened beforehand. Again, when you constantly are trading away picks, you got to hit on mid-round ones. And that's like Tutu Atwell and Van Jefferson ain't cutting it. So that's kind of the problem with them. Like, I think that they've kind of directionally been okay in some of the picks that they've made. Just they haven't landed, which is part of the problem. So, you know, we'll see. Stafford has committed to playing again. Sean McVay's back. So I think Stafford's going to be a rebound candidate. So that'll be the big deal there. How is Trey Lance progressing? We don't know. 420 passing attempts since January 1st of 2018. How about that? How about think about what you were doing January 1st on 2018. Since that date, Trey Lance has thrown 420 passes that have mattered. The summer went through where they developed Lance, but then he's hurt. So they bring back, you know, they bring in Garoppolo, right? Garoppolo was under contract. They restructured him. There was some question about what does that mean about Lance. Garoppolo comes back, plays fine. Garoppolo gets hurt. Purdy comes in. Purdy plays fine. Purdy gets hurt. Josh Johnson comes in the NFC Championship game. He gets hurt. Purdy goes back out there with a torn UCL. And now we're still wondering how Trey Lance is progressing. So that's your Trey Lance update. Top 15 dynasty asset. I don't want anything. Top 15 dynasty quarterback. I don't like that, right? Entering year three without really any understanding of how he's played in the last 6 years, right? Or basically playing one season in the last 6 years. I'm good. You guys can take that. I'll add to him to upgrade. What's the plan at quarterback for Seattle? To get better than Russell Wilson. That was the plan. They were run-centric, and then they decided to be pass-centric, and they go full-on, you know, we're going to run over expectation. We're going to do this thing. We're going to throw over expectation. Russell Wilson's gone. Geno Smith's our guy. We're going to embrace him. We're going to go to the playoffs. That's how the quarterback situation went. They have to tag him. They don't have a choice, I don't think. We'll see what the long-term extension looks like. Is it something like a car deal where they could get out of it? I think that makes some sense. You know, I think like they've probably, I don't think Geno Smith's probably their 10-year plan at quarterback. I'm not even sure he's their 5-year plan, but he's kind of Mr. Right Now. And, you know, until you, it's not awful to sort of have that as a solution. Again, you got to be careful about committing yourself to that long-term. But always constantly be churning through the position, very similar to what Philadelphia has. Right? They constantly churn through guys in the quarterback two type range. Seattle got that right with Geno Smith ultimately long term. That's a lesson that they should learn going forward. All right, that's going to do it here for this edition. So 16 questions from the NFC. We'll work on some additional stuff here for the next week or so. Got some team analysis that we're going to do from the off season. You know, some of the moves and stuff as well. We'll do some more tier stuff. So excited about this next 6 weeks or so leading up to free agency. We'll get some rookie coverage going as well later on here in the off season. So that'll do it here for this edition. Go ahead and check out your Analytics Dynasty Team Building Guide if you haven't already got it. The Dynasty Team Building Guide is available now. And that's fun. A lot of fun. Subscribers writing as well. So fun. Excited about this one and excited about this offseason. So that'll do it here for this edition. Till next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.